So we're holding here, we're done the Ramban before the this we're done Amud Kufyut Ches. We got up to Kufyut Ches, the Bris of Lukas Hashanim and the Shnias, and now we're going to be doing a long Barbanel that will speak about Yovel. The Barbanel usually sums up many different shitas. He's kind of a late Rishona or early Achron, if you want to call it. He lived at the Spanish at the time of the Spanish Golos. So he's going to discuss Yovel. Now, just before we begin his thing, it's important to bear in mind Shemitah and Yovel. There's something about it that's all encompassing. You're talking about a cycle of time which is huge. It's the biggest cycle of time, really, and therefore it stands to reason that it's going to have a lot of deep meanings to it, and that's why you have all these remuzim and all these sodos. Mishosha mitzvah tzara pshat. First thing is pshat. Shavotza Hashem lo dia lamo ka kol shalom. Olabesof yoshev kol dova la shachofitzu litna betchilo kiloi haaretz. K'moyshe kosov k'diko aretz. The first point about Yovel is, at the end of the day, everything belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a way of retaking ownership. It's just like when you lease land, you lease it for a certain amount of time, and even though while you've leased it, you think it's yours, but at some point it goes back. When I was young, they used to say, I think it's probably an urban legend, but it used to say, they used to go that Rockefeller Center is a private property, it belongs to Rockefeller, which I do think is true. It was true at the time. But they also said that once a year they close it just to show who's boss. That I don't know if that was true or a legend, but the idea is right. So when people lend something out for a long period of time, just so that you don't get the sense of it's yours, it comes back again. So everything goes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to show you at the end of the day we're on his territory. We also have to count the years. So a person every year is saying to himself, I am here temporarily. I'm here just for the interim. And, it's not mine. It also helps you understand it also helps keep away from gzela. Besides not feeling overly possessive about your land, you also, when you steal something, you say to yourself, you know, it's coming, it's going, it's gone. What's the point of it? I'm not, it's never going to stay mine forever. Hashem will always make things go back to rightful owners. He says, it's something that's very similar to what they do in the government. Shalokha adnos mizman lazam arab sorsha sorehem. Last year, every so often when somebody has like a principality or a some sort of land that is managed by some sort of feudal lord of sorts, if there's somebody on top of him, he'll take it away for a while. All of it is to remind them who's in charge. It's very interesting, in Jerusalem, when it was ruled by the Turks, it was horrible. that's true. But they used to have one of their customs, one of the Turkish laws was called Muharram, which meant that if you did not own any property, if you didn't own the building you're living in, the house you're living in, you had to move out after 3 years. In other words, every 3 years, there would be this massive reshuffling of people, and the logic behind it was that it was something that it allowed people not to become entrenched in where they were, and then there'd be issues. So I don't know if that was what they had in mind, or if they're just dumb dysfunctional. It really was. It was described as being kind of an awful scene every few years. The whole Yerushalayim would be taking all this stuff going from apartment to apartment, most people didn't own it. But Eich Shelo Yeh, That was the idea. V'chein adov hazeh shorot Hashem shoshokol karkel shalo achuzas arzon baruch hu. V'chein kol eved ish etzem tafsiyot v'shus boro. Everything, property and human beings will go from one to the other. It's very interesting also, you see the Torah speaks about property and people. Those are the two things that people really feel they own. If somebody owns metaltolin, if somebody owns a car, okay, you know, you don't have that sense of permanence. A slave and land has a certain feel of permanence to it, and that's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, at some point it goes back. He says, V'ulo malcher tziyasa ken yorosam pen yimidu asorim bahem. The reason why it's done by kings and sort of feudal lords is so that nobody gets entrenched and strong enough to overcome them, but rather an HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's for us so that we keep the right perspective. Okay, that was one point. Now, I've heard from Chachamim, which means Kabbalah, that there's a tremendous sod. It sort of is the sense of the entire scope of the world from Bria till its Tikkun. Gambin Ashvius, the cycle of seven. The number we use is sevens. Gambazemish in Shachmudalabitova. They felt that there's chachm in it. Yadu heim leitzim oizchol adam. They know it, and they're not telling anybody. The obvious reference is to the spheres that they are connected. The spheres. It's the entire complement. The same thing, just like we have by sphere Saima. I don't know when he says that he doesn't know it. I guess he himself is not keen on just passing it along. It wasn't. I mean, there was far available. He could have looked and seen it. But I think he just says it's not our business. He says, okay, without looking at the thing itself, without understanding what the seven stands for, but you can't help but notice seven is a very significant number that keeps coming round and again. We have 6 days of Shabbos, 6 years of Shemitah, and 6 years of plowing and 7 years Shemitah. And then we have Yovel. Pesach is 7 days, Sukkot is 7 days, and after Sukkot we have Atzeres, and then we have 7 weeks from Pesach until Atzeres. And after the seven, we have Chag Atzeres. Same pattern. You see that when you carry a bris, it's done with seven. Like it says, Kes Sheva Kifsay Stigach Miyadi. Bilam made seven Mizbechos, and the word Shvua, which means something that's fast and permanent, the Ramban says it comes from Losh Shiva. It says many, and there are many more sevens. He says, look into it and understand it. So it's very interesting. The Barbanel says, and I think it's an important understanding, to important tool in learning about certain things. Let's say a person has a case that he's, you know, like let's say he's a Sherlock Holmes, and he finds all sorts of strange bits and pieces. Now Sherlock Holmes always knew the answer, so. You know, he immediately found this mysterious guy from Algeria that was here for 2 weeks, and he left the snuff on the thing and so on and so forth. That's Sherlock Holmes. For us, many times, most of the times, we don't know the answer. But you still need to keep in mind that there's a trail there. We have a tendency to go wrong in one or two directions. Either we disregard information that we can't make any sense. So let's say a police officer, detective, whose job is to decipher crimes. That's the only thing people care about. So he will look into a case, he'll come up with 25 bits and pieces. One of them led him to a suspect, and he thinks the suspect is guilty. He disregards the other stuff, and you know, it's just gone. That's one way we go wrong. or we leap to conclusions that are half-baked and sort of we don't know what they mean. There's nothing wrong. No, there's nothing wrong. It's appropriate to learn Torah and say, you know, 7 is a very, very significant number, and to keep making note of it. Even if we don't get past that, it's still important. And someday we could understand it. But understanding 7, generally speaking, just let me clue in on 2 things about 7 that are significant. One is the 7 of the numbers that could have been picked, 7 is absolutely meaningless. 10 is an easy number. 10 is digital. You know, it's the amount of digits in a person's hands. Most of us, we're too polite to use our feet to count also. So 10 is a very, very good base. And that makes sense. Anything that's 10, 5. One hand, that's how much you count. It's a certain basic counting. Fine. The numbers, something like 3 is sort of a natural number in some ways. 7 relates to nothing in any way, shape, or form. We don't have anything at 7. So when Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the 7th day, it's very hard to ask ourselves, how did that evolve naturally? You know, if it would have been every 10th day, there's a natural sense. Every 3rd day, there's certain things that psychologically we make sense that this is a number that people like. 7 is, as they say in Yiddish, nishtahi nishtaher. You know, what is it? That's one thing to note about 7. There's a second inyan, so that's just to take note of it and understand that the very fact that the Sheirish of Bria Solom was done with 6 days and 7th day is meaningful. It's harder to see it as the result of some natural process. A natural process would produce every 10th day, or if the workers were in charge, every 3rd day. But to have a 7th day is not. A second point about 7, the Maharal says, every cube, which means every physical entity, has 6 sides to it. Top, bottom, right, left, front, back, or east, west, north, south, up and back and down. Those are, so every physical entity, if it's 3-dimensional, it has that. There's also one nekuda, which the Maharal calls the nekuda emtsoi, is the midpoint. I would rather call it the idea that holds it all together. So for instance, a car can be seen as the 6 sides, quote unquote, would be all the pieces of the car in a box. But then all the pieces together in a certain way, the distribution of the pieces, the structure of them, the way they're joined, that's the 7. So the great entity that we have is 6 plus 1. So in time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the same thing. There are 6 days, and there is 1 day that gives it all meaning together. Those are 2 notes on 7. Okay. Now he asks like this. The Rabbi Brunel is continuing. So he says like this. He has a kasha, which Tosfos speaks to others. You don't find a mitzvah, for instance, a woman who's a zava, which we're knowing, that's what we're knowing today, that's our sphere's nekiyim, is that she counts 7 days. There's no mitzvah to count those days in any way, shape, or form. You know, you have to mark it off and keep it on the luach and make sure you have it right, but that's it. There's no mice accounting, but on Shmit and Yovlos, we have a chiyuv to count. He says the first thing is that we have a Mesoras Baal Peh that goes along with the Chumash. It's not just what it says. So it says Safarta means to count, but whether the counting is a literal process or it means arrive at the answer, that's up to Torah Baal Peh. And he says Vikam Kol Burjov, Yerua kichol drachecha darchei neim chosef se'emes. So he says, without Tosh Valpeh, if you would, and Abarbanel is a Mefurish, and he's from Spain where they tried to get Pshat Nepsukim, he says at the end of the day, you have to come on to Tosh Valpeh, and that puts each thing in its place. V'chein v'asa kabola shet sivui b'sefatocha idiyoi v'otzach mini v'peh, v'tzivu asfira kaz v'zav v'zav en ashkacha b'yomim. So that's how we have in Tosh Valpeh. And he has another telling phrase that I think is significant. Umin hagan she Yisrael b'chol mokim kachu. Va'afu pishen nevim le'nevim. He says, and Klal Yisrael, that's how they do it always. And even though they're not nevim, they're nevim. So Abarbanel says something here that it's really astounding. It's sort of the end of a paragraph, so you don't notice it so much. He says the following point. It says on Forshin Gemara, and that this has this is Baal Peh, and this is not Baal Peh. But he says also it's the minhag of Klal Yisrael to do it that way, and the minhag of Yisrael b'chomon kahu ve'afu b'shem nevim le'nevim heim. We can trust the instincts, the collective instincts of Klal Yisrael. Now I want to spend a minute on this point because this is a point that's sorely tested today. There are minhagim in Klal Yisrael that have become very, very much part and parcel. Minhagim of Yireyim and Shleimim. I'm not talking about minhagishtus, but I'm talking about minhagim that how people do mitzvahs and what surah and so on. It is become a sport in the recent kufas to sort of debunk all these minhagim. Someone sits down, he has tons and tons of resource material at his disposal, goes through it and says there is no marker for it. Many times they're right. So we're talking about Chalaka, you're talking about like Bomer, which is today, that's why it's so there. You're talking about opening the door for Shvei Chamoscha, saying Shvei Chamoscha and Kishal Yor, many, many things like that. That Klal Yisrael has accepted as sort of, there's a sense that this is the way things ought to be done. And one does need to weed out shtusim, but this is talking about things that gedolim v'tovim were nohag, and that's how they felt. We need to trust the instincts of Klal Yisrael, even if we can't pin it down. Let me give you a mashal. Somebody is studying business in a university, and you have a really brilliant lecturer. And he shows different business models and analyzes them and explains why they're good or bad and so on and so forth. You're really, really taken by it. And then he asks the students to deliver papers. And they're delivering and he rips them apart with very good questions and demolishes their papers. And that's really, really good. Now, this fellow who graduates, bright guy, picked up the Derech HaLimud from his Rebbe. He marches off to company, where the CEO has moved the company from being a small, a $10 million a year enterprise to being listed in New York Stock Exchange. And they're having a meeting, and the CEO says, my feeling is the market's going to move this way, my feeling is people want this, we need to do this. And this young fellow gets up and he rips him to shreds. He says, well, you haven't brought any proof and the points you brought are definitely debatable and so on and so forth. And if you can't prove your point, you're wrong. Well, no. We have a sense that this person's instincts are in tune with popular, with the market. And whether or not he can explain it and prove it and show it, still at the end of the day, he's right. It certainly is wonderful if you can do both. If you have the instincts and you can explain it logically, but it doesn't disprove it. Understanding Klal Yisrael has the chelik of Klal Yisrael that's chored l'dvar Hashem. They want to do mitzvahs. They're into it. They're trying their best to do it. On a collective level, their minhagim and anhagas should be taken with great reverence. Could it be that they're wrong? It certainly could be. But the default setting is they're right, and you really, really have to go all the way and then some to prove it wrong. It's obviously not this is not nogia to minhag ishtus. You know, if there's a minhag that they eat Ben and Jerry's ice cream on Shavuos, second date of Ben and Jerry's ice cream party, it might be customary to do that, but it's hard to say that this minhag was born of a deep search for meaning in Kedusha. It's nothing wrong with eating Ben Jerry's, for those who not Makber Nechol of Yisrael, nothing wrong with eating it on Shavuos, but to call that a minhag is obviously nonsense. Or any shtus that it can be. But I'm talking about people in the attempt to do right, in the attempt to do mitzvahs kilchasa, things that have developed, they bear a certain emes, a certain stamp of approval because of this passage. It's well worth remembering next time somebody comes along and says there's no more tradition or economic. It depends who and what the minig is. I'm sorry, I actually said that this was the Abarbanel, actually it's the Chinuch. I got confused, I'm sorry. This is the Chinuch, and last piece. So the piece until now is the Chinuch, actually, I'm sorry. So he says he finds, I think, true also by Torah Shabbat and other areas. So the bottom line of the Chinuch is that this mitzvah sphere being unique is a Messiris, and you also are. It's a Messiris, that's one. He also speaks about the Cheshivas of Messiris, and the Torah Shabbat Peh that tells us Pshat and Pesukim, we'd be lost without it. And secondly, he speaks about the Cheshivas of Messiris, of Minhag HaVesein, and so on. Okay, now we have the Barbanel. So, I apologize. Vehine. So he also is explaining the reasons. I mean, it's the same idea, but Agopanim. It's now is the Barbanel. First, he brings the Rama Mor Nebuchim. Vina Rama Mor Kasav. Shehoya Tam Bishmita Lishpoy Saaretz. Yeshatoys of Teskoichel Zerea. So the Rama writes Al Pidach Avshat that the reason for Shmita is it improves the quality of the land. Vina Dovakim Bemis. He says that's not true because if so, the Torah says that in the sixth year it'll make enough an abundance of crops for 3 years. If all it is a helpful hint on improving productivity, we wouldn't be chayev golus for not keeping Shemitah. It doesn't make any sense that you would punish so harshly for that. So he says, no. Aval tachas ha-mitzah zois v'nyana, mitzah ha-yol v'nyana, avar shal shochem. He'll explain it to Rabbi says three ways. One is pshut Torah, v'aderech ha-sheni k'fi atzas chaya adam, that it's sort of a metaphor for a person's life, v'aderech ha-shlish ha-derech ha-mitzah ha-mitzias. And the third pshat is, it's something that goes to the heart of the emes of the mitzias. And he's going to explain each one. First one, Derech Echad, Pshat, the Torah is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did two chasadim with us. One is, HaChidush HaKolol Ubriyas HaHovim, Shenasa Kol Davet Tivoy, creating and giving each thing its nature, its abilities. And the second thing is Torah, Bashena Torah Loikis. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to build into the land both elements, the understanding that Teva is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the understanding of Torah. So he says Shemitah is Keneged Briyas Olam. And being that Shemitah confirms the same idea as Shabbos, Nikas B'Shem Shabbos Berech HaAretz. It's called Shabbos. Just like Shabbos, what Shabbos is to the weekdays, so too Shemitah is to the years. That's one. Two, next paragraph. Aba yovel nemu loshen Shabbos. If yishein tamu liske chedush olam b'shemitah. Eliske matan Torah, yovel is connected matan Torah. And just like the Torah was given the 50th day after we went out of Mitzrayim, so too we have, and just like Matan Torah was a shofar, you have a shofar in Yovel. There is a shofar for Shemitah, and you have in Yovel a mitzvah to miskadish, just like Kiddushim u'mocha. In my Yovel it says Vikidashtem. So there's a parallel between the two most significant events that happen in the world. Bria Solom, Matan Torah, is Shemitah and Yovel. That's one, that's Derech HaPshat. Two, HaDerech HaSheni, Me'atzas HaChayim. The second Derech is, it's sort of an instruction for life. In the way that he learned Pesach, Sfiras Omer, Shavuos, and Sukkos. People who are shleimim really should care about the time they lose more than anything else they lose. Whatever you lose in terms of goods, they're replaceable. Even if your car is totaled, new cars, there are no lack of new cars. You may not have the money yet, but you have it. Time is gone, it's gone. O kemo she'amru b'mishnah yofa she'achas b'tshuva ha'aseh tov kol chayei olam haba, and being that a person's days are very, very limited in terms of what he has to accomplish, l'chein ro'eh she'avad adam zmanei, ki'ayim katzan lachem ruba. And that's why a person needs to push himself to accomplish some things. And he brings Rav Meir, would set up a memayit basic v'asayk b'toira. In order that a person keep this, bear this in mind always, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the mitzvahs gave us mitzvahs that remind us of how short our lifespan is, and that's why so you have the world's greatest 7 days. It helps us understand our life is about 70 years, and we should not and we shouldn't throw them out for nothing. If Shalayitzis on the Rik, I'll be Meisim Chark Meisabarim. And that's why you have many, many sevens in the Torah. Chuppah is Sheva Brachas, you have 7 days, Shavuos Mishnah, Tumas Nida, Bris Mila, Tayas Mitzora, Tumas Ames, Miluim, and so on. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every mitzvah reinforces the idea that the clock is ticking, it's almost 70 years are up, and what we have is Meshach Shem Meshim Shana. That's one thing. The somebody, just a side point, somebody said something very, very very fascinating. He was speaking at the Shiva get together and he said, if you ever want chizik, do the following thing. When you're commuting to work, you know, if you're using public transportation, like he uses every day the train, he said, sit down next to somebody who's sitting on his or her iPhone and playing Angry Birds or some sort of some game on it, and look at them and say to yourself, aren't we lucky that we don't have to kill time, that we actually have something we can do without time, that these people have too much time on their hands and the only thing they do is spend hours playing meaningless nonsense on the gadgets. He said he feels it gives him a lot of chizuk. Okay, so he says the same thing is true with Shemitah, that it was, there was six and then seven, all of it, hine, next paragraph. Im kein merames tamitzas ha-shemitah u'shiz ka'odem kamim me'shnei chayav. A person remember what his life is, and he has a tachlis of Shabbos, and a person needs to prepare for it. Just in all of these things, whether it's Shemitah that you don't have what to eat, whether it's Shabbos that you can't cook, or whether Yovel that everything is gone, there's a certain sense of finality to what a person is doing. I think if I can put another finger on it, it's not only that the time is clicking, and then we need to live through a moment. It's like, you have on Shabbos, and then as soon as Shabbos comes, you remind yourself, oh, you forgot to turn the light off in the fridge, you left the oven on, you don't have this and that, and there's a sense of, it's gone, I can't fix it, I can't remedy it. That's the type of sense that it's supposed to give you. One more paragraph. The omnit says, just like Shemitah, you have 7 years, the Yovel seven Shemitahs. And that's the teacher, he says, within a person's life, not all of the years are the same. When he's young, he can't work, and when he's old, he can't work. The work, the time in his life when he can work is about 50 years. And when a person is at the end of his 60s, so there's 10 years and 10 years in a person's life that are not really useful. And it's only 50 years in a person's life that he's useful, that he can actually accomplish. So a person needs to say to himself, I don't have 70 years to accomplish, I have 50 years to accomplish. And so you have the Yovel, which is 50 years. In other words, the maximum, the Olam Oshel Olam, the Adam, is something that is 50 years. I mean, it's interesting. I don't want to be overly zealous about it, but, you know, our lifespan, Baruch Hashem, thank God, has improved. But people are also productive starting much later in life. It used to be that by the time you're 18, 19, 20, you're fending for yourself full-time. Even if you're going to college, you support yourself, so on. That was the reality of it. Today, it seems as if we can't get out of that 50 years. Also, if people choose early retirement, they cut their productive life by a lot more. But even if we don't, people somehow, it sort of keeps pace. We somehow mature later, are ready to work later. No matter how we cut it or slice it, we'll always seem to be around it. Okay, we don't have the piece of Abinel that speaks on the Pnimius, but Al Capone, we finished the Abinel with his two main drachma over here.